Hello and welcome to the Cannon Fodder Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Barnes, saying down with the manosphere, up with the danosphere, where you can still be a man. You know, we're both men, take our word for it, or subscribe to my OnlyFans, but it's without all of the yak, 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 the wine, wine, the let's go shopping about it all. We've got other things to talk about in the danosphere. For example, my co-host, legendary comedian, legendary head of hair. I've said it before, hair like Stalin. And now I'm just Stalin for time. It's the original czar of comedy, Comrade Corky McDonald.
Hey, Danosphere and all you adherents to the Manosphere. I am a man with the planosphere. I hope to be someday a man with a plan, a canalmosphere, Panamasphere. I don't know where I'm going with that.
He's got a plan, a plan that'll fix you good.
Yeah.
In a good way.
I'm drinking out of a Coke canosphere.
He's in the canosphere. I'm neutral on the canosphere.
Are you?
You know what I mean? Like, I'm just, it just feels like it's just rhyming with man and Dan at that point.
I see,
you know what I
see.
Mean? Like, kind of like trying too hard, cans. Yeah. Like, you got that can do spirit. I get it.
Wow.
You know, it's just, it's too easy.
Maybe I've just never grown up, right? And I'm part of the Peter Panosphere.
Same thing as the manosphere.
Dan, what do we do on this show?
Well, normally we talk movies.
Normally.
It's been heard. It's been heard that occasionally we'll slip in a little commentary on the movies of yesteryear, yesterday, and sometimes even today.
Yeah.
And I think the movie of the day today, I know this doesn't come out until like mid or to late November, so it's not the movie of the day anymore.
No.
We get it, but this is early October. Put yourself back in that kind of mind. Let's just kind of, inception yourself back to that point. You know, just like get the primer, just get in the box, primer yourself back to early October. And what was the movie of the day? Quirky, of course, it was One Battle After Another.
Yeah.
That's the hot movie of late
September. It's the movie of the moment.
Early October.
Yeah.
And amazingly, because you have not seen a film in the theaters. Now, correct me if I'm wrong here. Now, I believe it was Big Top Pee Wee. That was the absolute, that was your cutoff. That was where you were like, they're not doing better than this.
Exactly.
I'm out.
I saw Big Top Pee Wee. I saw the extended kiss with him and Valeria Nicolino, and I was like, they'll never recreate passion like
That's
this
it.
In a movie
That's
ever
just,
again.
It's too romantic.
Yeah.
It's too sexy. It's just like the sparks were just flying off of the screen.
Right.
Of course, this is, they're 35 millimeters, so things were bursting into flame.
Oh, my God.
Constantly. All the time.
It was the end of Inglourious Bastards in that theater from the sheer sparks.
Was, yeah, it absolutely was. Absolutely was. You know what? Actually, my career as a critic kind of like straddles the era where we went from like 35 millimeter being the standard, what you just showed it on film, to now digital being the standard. And occasionally stuff will come around in 35 millimeter or 70 millimeter if certain theaters are equipped to show it. I think the absolute very last 35 millimeter screening I ever went to was for the A-Team. And Joe Carnahan's the A-Team. The last reel melted. We did not finish the film. That was my last experience. We're certainly better off. Yet, 35 millimeters the way to see a film, but also it does have its own challenges at the same time. It's that it can burst into flames very easily. But One Battle After Another, that has nothing to do with anything. Corky, One Battle After Another, we've both seen the film. This is the amazing thing. It's a movie of the moment. We've both seen it. It's not a movie of 70, 80 years ago, but it's of the moment. And how did you feel about One Battle After Another, seeing it in the theater?
So I used my Cinemark credits and got in there, and man, what a film. I love it. I love P.T. Anderson. I love the way he makes you uncomfortable. I love the way he uses everything at his in his toolbox to make you uncomfortable, whether it's camera techniques, especially the score, what you know about characters and how they behave. just it's a wild ride. Filmed partly in Sacramento, which was a thrill for the whole entire theater. I loved it. I absolutely adored that movie. What about you, Dan?
Yeah, I was a fan of it as well. I mean, I did sort of expect it to kind of like blow everything away and just sort of be the obvious number one. I wouldn't say it's quite there, but it's certainly going to be around in my top 10 or so at the end of the year. And I'm in the bag for Paul Thomas Anderson all the way. And I'll see it again. I'll see it several times.
Yeah.
I just see that as, it's just the first time I watched it, you know. It's like it's a movie for history, as all of his films are. The Sacramento thing, it almost like kind of worked against me, I think, on that first viewing, because I just kept seeing Sacramento, and at a certain point they reveal that the name is, it's called Bedford Forest. And later on there's scenes in Eureka, which I am also pretty familiar with Eureka, and that's called Bacton Cross.
Yeah.
And it's also filmed in Modesto and Lodi, I believe, as well. Other cities I'm also familiar with. And it's just sort of that kind of thing like took me out, because there's an absolutely amazing car chase in this movie. One of the great car chases of all time. And it's filmed on the streets of Sacramento. You have that like weird feeling of that uncanny feeling of like, I'm watching a car chase on a street that I have driven down so many times. Like, so many times I've driven down by this street. And there's this one point where the car is sort of like pinballing off of other cars to like get through traffic,
get
around, running red lights, taking lefts from like the third lane over. And I'm just like, oh, I've been in that Uber. I've been in that Uber. I have absolutely, like, that is a ride that I have taken, no doubt about it. Yes, the move where you bang off of three other cars so that you won't make the red light. But yeah, so it was a little uncanny and it was a little weird, but also, I mean, it is a really fantastic movie. And again, I'm looking forward to seeing it again as much as I was looking forward to seeing it the first time. I think what's lost amongst it all, maybe not too much, but just because he's gotten so much acclaim for other performances, he's won an Oscar already. Man, Leo, God damn.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a physical performance. It's a comedic performance. It's a very emotional performance. It's a performance that is just all the way out on the edge at all times, and that's his kind of acting. That's what he excels at.
Yeah.
He's go for broke, and he really does go for broke.
He gets to be like Benicio del Toro, Sean Penn. They get to steal the scenes that they're in because they're so weird and fun,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
But Leo has to be the center while just matching their energy or forcing their energy a little bit more. Actually, does he share any scenes with Sean Penn?
Well, that's interesting.
One,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the briefly the scene in the supermarket.
Yeah. So,
but yeah, I don't know how many scenes they actually have together. Yeah, it's interesting. It is this sort of like phantasm sort of thing where like it's almost like he's in his head in that supermarket scene because he just sort of floats by. Yeah, it's a fascinating film, and it's obviously we're just at the very, very tip of award season. It's just beginning, and I was talking to people about this earlier, and it's like, yeah, this movie's absolutely going to be a front runner. It's definitely going to be in the mix for award season. But at the same time, just look at what happened last year. Anora came out right around the same time, and it had the whole, went through the whole, like, here's the movie, backlash. Here's the next movie, backlash.
Yeah.
Here's the movie, backlash. Here's the movie, backlash. On and on and on. And finally, we got all the way back around to Anora again. The backlash is already well underway for one battle after another. I mean, the obvious backlash from the right wing, but other backlashes are a brewing and a coming, and other things are going to supplant it. But again, who's there at the end, and what's the movie that people are actually going to be talking about and thinking about and feeling things for? So
I'll tell you one backlash.
Lots of movies to come.
One backlash is Sean Penn. I'm coming after him for stealing my haircut. That dude.
That was, yeah.
It's
he really took your whole vibe.
Right? I wear those tight shirts. I dress in camo and wear lifts.
You walk exactly like that.
It's yes.
Like so mannered, your walk. but yeah, I think two thumbs up. Absolutely, for one battle after another.
Yeah.
If you still haven't seen it, and maybe it's playing in a theater, go see it. You know, you probably missed it on the IMAX and the 35mm and the 70mm, whatever else. But I think it's just a film with a ton of energy and comedy and thrills, and it's really cool. Even if it's not amongst my favorite Paul Thomas Anderson films, it's cool to see him get to work on that level of the scope of it, of the budget of it, and working with a big star like Leo without like sacrificing who he is
as a
filmmaker.
That's interesting.
Undoubtedly a Paul Thomas Anderson film.
Yeah, I'd like to know your PTA top 10, because it definitely is in my top three PTAs.
Yeah. All right. Well, There Will Be Blood and Magnolia are still one and two for me.
Mm. All right. Before we get into this week's feature presentation, the movie that we've met here today, the movie that we told you last episode we were going to talk about, we want to take a moment to thank our PayPal supporters. Our donors are the heroes of the show. We couldn't do it without you. And we thank you so much for your support.
And if you would like to donate to the show, if you'd like to join the League of Heroes, as I refer to them, not the Justice League, the Injustice League, because we fix injustices.
The Fanosphere.
Some trademark issues, right? The Fanosphere. The Dare Danosphere.
Oh, my God.
Whatever. Whatever sphere you're in. Just get all your spheres. Coins are spherical, but we would really love those rectangular dollars, and especially digitally, because cash, I don't know what you're going to do with just throwing some change at our faces. So if you would like to donate to the show in just a proper way, head to daredaniel.com, find the menu at the top of the page, click support the show, or find the donate button. It's there on the homepage. We made it pretty easy for you. You can make a one-time donation. You can make a monthly donation. I believe you can make a yearly donation. I don't know. We're not sure how far in advance you plan your donations. Maybe you have your donations scheduled out. Some people, you know, like those 5-year plan people, the 10-year plan. I never had a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan. Are your donations part of that 10-year plan? I don't know. Maybe you've already got them planned out. In 10 years, will you donate to us? It'll still help. It'll still help. So, any contribution helps keep this show going. We are absolutely listener supported, and we thank our listeners so much.
Speaking of going, today's film is about a wanderer who goes all over the place. Actually, she only kind of goes in a few square miles, but
right, yeah.
Today we're discussing Agnes Varda's 1985 film Vagabond. The IMDb synopsis for Vagabond: a young woman's body is found frozen in a ditch. Through flashbacks and interviews, we see the events that led to her inevitable death.
Yes, this week we're reviewing Vagabond. This week on episode 50, Corky. This is episode L. If you're Roman, if you're an old Roman, you're like, what is 50? What are you talking about? L. This is episode L.
First, if you're an old Roman, this is a podcast. You're probably
this is
pretty
what's
confused.
Called a podcast. Like, it's so cool that
these
you were, like,
the gods
frozen from the ice.
You.
Like, we're really excited about it, yeah. Written, directed, and co-edited by Agnès Varda. Part of the French New Wave, one of the bright lights of French cinema for 50-plus years. Almost too easy to say she was the Mary Cassatt of the French New Wave, but because she had such a long and storied career. She directed dozens of films over many decades, making both narrative features and documentaries and shorts, just like her longtime husband Jacques Demy. In her later years, she was frequently the star and subject of her documentaries, films like The Gleaners and I, The Beaches of Agnes, Faces Places, Varda by Agnes. She had experimental films, she did short films, she was a photographer, she created art installations. She was the first female director to win an honorary Oscar in 2017, and her nomination for Best Documentary Feature for Faces Places made her the oldest person ever nominated for a competitive Oscar at 89 years old, and she was as artistically fecund as they come all the way until her death in 2019 at the age of 90. Vagabond is one of 4 Agnes Varda movies to make the Sight and Sound list of the best films of all time. Tied at number 101. Also on the list, you have Le Bonheur at number 152. Apologize for that pronunciation. The Gleaners and I at number 67. And Cleo from 5 to 7 all the way at number 14, right between The Searchers and Rules of the Game. High praise indeed. Vagabond stars Sandrine Bonnaire as Mona, a young drifter in the French countryside. It blends a little bit of narrative with a sort of pseudo-documentary as various people reflect on their encounters with and their impressions of Mona, sometimes directly to camera. The film premiered September 1985 at the Venice Film Festival, where it won the Golden Lion, that's the top award at the festival, nominated for Best Film and Director at the César Awards, that's the French Oscars, with Sandrine Bonnaire winning Best Actress that year. It is a stunning performance. No ego, no sentiment, no holds barred, Hulk fucking Hogan style. Vagabond was acclaimed upon release, performed respectably at the box office, and here it sits at number 101 on the Sight and Sound list, probably feeling more relevant, more vital, more urgent, more of our times even than of the times of 1985. Quirky.
Yeah.
Vagabond, what did you think? Do you feel it was more relevant today than ever?
Absolutely, I thought that. Yeah. I thought, because it's not an uncommon sight anymore to have people camped out, tenting up and down, you know, whatever roadside you use, whether it's big city or small town. It's not uncommon. And I'm sure it was probably pretty striking in 1985. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I got to say, this movie wasn't for me.
Really?
Yeah. You know, none of these are bad. It's not a bad movie. I got what it was doing. I believe I got what it was doing. And it didn't grab me. Appreciated a character study of someone who's got no character, of just kind of an empty person who's just completely rejecting everything. But I guess I found her inaccessibility easily took me out of, okay, so why should I care about this movie? You know, watching her just fall towards this inevitable death and reject and refuse and escape and deny, there was nothing that made me like, oh, okay, I can see, I want to see what happens next. I want to see her next debauchery. It was just one inevitability. Sure. And it didn't grab me.
Fair enough. I didn't think it was like monotonous or repetitive at all. Like it was the same thing happening over and over. I thought it kept kind of varying it up. She's obviously not a great person. And I think that's kind of, to me, that's really the strength of the film. I feel like there's another version of this film where it fully stacks the deck either for or against her. But to me, this is like a movie of true empathy. And I feel like now, and here I go on my soapbox again, but I feel like especially young people nowadays have this confused idea about what empathy is, and that they think that, well, I have empathy for these people who think like me, look like me, are like me, but not for these people who don't think like me, aren't like me. And if you think I have empathy for some, but not for you, you don't have empathy. That's not really how it works. This is a movie of no judgment, but it's also a movie that is not about glorification, right? Like Mona, as you said, like she the way the movie is presented, we're seeing her a lot through other people's eyes, and most of what we get about like her is often told through them, you know, and their impressions of her. She seems to almost emerge like from the sea,
yeah,
as tabula rasa, you know, total blank slate. No identity. She, at the very, towards the end of the movie, she says she doesn't even have a birth certificate anymore. You know, like we get little bits about her identity, but there's not really, like, she doesn't have any kind of wisdom to share. She's not like a movie homeless person where she has a worldview to share, right? Other than freedom. Freedom in like the most elementary sense. Like she's so blank that everyone sees themselves in there, sees things in her she doesn't see in herself, and that maybe like don't even exists. Like they reveal themselves through these opinions of her. And I feel like the film is sort of asking these sort of dual questions. And this is what I mean by true empathy. The question number one is like kind of obvious, which is like, what do we give up, right, in terms of our freedom by pursuing comfort, abundance, right? Like we're weighed down by these things, by relationships, by jobs, by, we see this happening over and over again. But then also, like, it doesn't just ask that. Or doesn't just ask this next question, what is given up by choosing freedom over everything else, right? Like there are Letterboxd reviews of this film that are absolutely just unbelievable, where it's just like, yes, you go, girl. They can't tell you what to do. And it's like, she dies in a ditch. That's the first scene of the movie, is her corpse.
Yeah.
And later we see like, what is this like mayhem that she got into? Like, what's this? What happened to her? She tripped.
Yeah.
Like she tripped and that was it. That was it. That's it. She died. And what's implied, I think, there, not shown, but implied, I think, she does not cry for help. This is not an injury that should kill you. She just sort of falls and probably sprains her ankle and can't get up.
She just gives up.
And then dies because it's freezing. She is independent to the end to her own inevitable destruction.
Yeah. Right?
She's not likable, but she's also not sentimentalized in any sort of way.
No.
Not by Varda, by others, by the characters in there, yes. She's so frustrating and so resistant of any sort of easy categorization. She makes choices that are unconscionable. She seems very lazy at times, and yet it's also like... It does seem there are like unspoken, ununderstood things about this woman. I feel like Agnes Varda gives her respect and gives her a certain dignity at times that even she would not give herself, you know. But I mean, this is why homelessness is such a like difficult issue and why it resists like the easiness of like a yes, no, us versus them sort of an answer, which is because it's like, well, what do you do with someone who doesn't want help, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't want help, refuses help, won't help themselves even. Yeah, and this is a film that asks those questions without being cruel about it. It's not so stacked one way or another that it's a polemic. To me, this is just a film of pure empathy. But I can understand why that is not... It's not a heroic journey in any sort of way by anyone, I don't think, except maybe like us as the audience.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said. It's not sentimentalized at all, the character of her through Agnes Varda's lens. Certain characters do romanticize her. Others pity her. Others conflate her with like their own salvation. Mm-hmm. And others have nothing nice to say about her, but they still try to help her out. They're all kind of unreliable narrators because we're seeing actually everything. And it's one of those movies where people kind of end up in each other's circle and lives and stuff. And you see the way she affects people and affects their relationship with the, mm-hmm. with the, you know, tertiary characters. But then again, she's an unreliable narrator herself.
Sure.
She can express that she would love to live like these farmers who have dropped out and, you know, they're actually doing the work, but man, she's given everything that she needs and has no interest in doing it. And I disagree that she's super independent because she wants to be taken care of when she wants it. She will rely on a man. She will transaction her body or whatever she has. She will steal from people. So she needs people. But, when she doesn't want it, then she is going to mock you for even trying to help her out, right? So she's purely just straight up rejecting society. And probably there's a bigger issue that I don't recognize as much as a man, that of a woman rejecting this kind of stuff and going it alone, especially on the road at her young age. So,
yeah.
I liked the unreliable narrator aspect because everybody's an unreliable narrator mm-hmm. in this whole thing. And right before the final event that, you know, leads to her death, there's a thing that doesn't even make any fucking sense that happens. And it's like, did that happen? Does that happen? What is that? And
what are you referring to?
The great people running around the town and sloshing wine all over her and stuff.
Oh, sure.
I know the explanation for what it is, but I had to like look that up. But it's so bizarre and unexplained that it's almost like in this movie where people do talk directly to camera while it's not a flashback or a part documentary interview, what rules are being broken, you know, or being bent and flipped around. So, but then again, all these things are happening, but there was never a point where I'm like, yes, I'm locked in. I need to know. I want to see. The performance was great. Agnes Varda makes a really compelling looking film with the whole movement of the camera in a lot of scenes, creating that motion, that wandering. The one aspect I did really, really appreciate that I thought was great was the nature aspect. Like, as you say, we see her kind of birth from the ocean. Several spots, the camera will sweep through and then end on a tree. And then we open up back on another tree that looks just like it. She sleeps in fields. She stays in greenhouses. She's attacked by those like rutabagas or whatever the fuck they are. There's the whole aspect of the trees that are rotting and someone's really trying to save those trees. It's like this one person who really tries to help her out. She's trying to save that rot from within, but there's just nothing you can do. If the trees want to die, they die, right? I really like the nature aspect of this.
Yeah, I mean, there is this kind of pervasive feeling of, like, decay, right?
Yeah.
Like, everything seems very old and decaying, and there's a lot of just abandoned places that she sleeps in, places that are in the middle of nowhere. There's also, and again, relevant to our times, absolutely, migrant farm workers. Everywhere she goes, she encounters a migrant, somebody from another country. Someone's from Tunisia or someone's from somewhere else. So that's something that she encounters all the time. And this is, at times it's also beautiful. I would say the opening shot is almost like a Van Gogh painting.
Yeah.
These rows of beautiful French countryside. And it's all happening in the French countryside, which of course is like this fantasy. Mm-hmm. A lot of us are like, well, wouldn't you just love to go and roam the French countryside? Well, maybe not like this. But yeah, I think, we're describing the same film, that's for sure. You know what I mean? Because, she doesn't even back herself up, right? And again, this is what I'm saying. It's like, what is your responsibility as a person towards somebody like this? Somebody who doesn't really even, like, want it. You know, someone who will not do something for themselves. But at the same time, I feel like there's these kind of tantalizing ideas information that we get about her. At one point, so this is like the whole potato farmer thing. So yeah, she goes to this family. They're farming potatoes. They're raising lambs, and it's this guy. He's super educated. I mean, he's pretty much a genius,
philosopher.
Right? But we're going back to the land with our kids, me and my wife, and they're working. She's got the headscarf on, rolling up their sleeves. They are working and working and working. And she comes in, Mona, and says like, "Oh, if only I could do this, right? This is what I want to do. This is my thing." And they're like, here's land.
Yeah.
Here's a place to sleep. Here's a little house. Here's comfort. Here's this over this. And she eventually chooses mud over rules, that over someone, you know, giving her shit. But at one point she says that she was a secretary, right?
Yep.
Like, this is not a woman who she's probably been poor most of her life, but she has had opportunities, right? And you really, she says, "I hated being a secretary." You're like, how fucking awful must that being a secretary be that, like, this is the preferable one? Is like, well, at least no one's doing whatever the fuck was happening at that secretary job. Or was it even that bad? Because we don't really even know. And again, that's what, to me, that's the strength of the movie is, there's no ego in the performance of this needs to be a likable character. There's no ego in terms of Agnes Varda in terms of I need to do something to make this character noble,
right,
or saintly,
no,
or even like good or likable or relatable even, right? Like, she so resists that easy answer. And that was what I was talking about in the beginning. Why I think this movie still is so relevant is like, what is the easy answer to like fixing our problems with poverty, with people who are homeless, who are insecure, who have like mental illness problems, much as she has mental illness problems, you know? And other people, again, they see themselves in there, they do something for her and feel good about themselves or bad about themselves, put themselves above her or below her or whatever. But she just sort of wafts kind of in and out of her lives. Again, emerges from the sea, a blank slate, and pretty much dies a blank slate.
Yeah.
We kind of go into, this is where we're entered, is her dead body, and where we leave is her kind of just on the verge of death. But Agnes, once again, there's a scene, it's very brief, it almost just is like, I don't want to call it a throwaway scene, but it's basically a rape scene.
Yeah.
In this film. Someone just comes upon her, says, "I've been following you," and starts attacking her. And Varda kind of pulls the camera away, like, this I don't want to see,
you know? Yeah,
this, we're gonna like give her,
you know what happens,
little, we give her that measure of dignity. And I think that's the same thing that happens at the end, is we're not going to watch her struggle. And if at the very end she does call for help, we're not going to watch that either. We're not going to see that. That's almost like the the deathbed retraction of the atheist, you know, watching that, you know, like it would be so against her character to cry out for something like that. And again, not that she doesn't use people, not that she just doesn't need other people or anything like that, but that's something that she would never admit to herself or allow to herself, I think. All right. Well, Corky, let's talk about favorite scenes. Did you have a favorite scene?
Well, I did. Like, I really liked the nature stuff, and I loved the traveling student, the teacher, the woman who gives speeches about this. She's really trying to take care of her, because I'm watching this and I'm like, what is the significance of this? And it really kind of boiled down to me like she thinks Mona is the tree. Mm. Mona knows that she is the rot. Mm. Like, it's this overarching thing in this story. That's a real thing that happens. That's happening in France with these, you know, native French trees dying from this rot that's pervasive. She thinks she can save her, and that's what she wants to make her. She's a saver, but Mona's like, no, I absorb. I'm gonna die. I'm you know. So I really like that, because she can't even express it, but she just knows. She has no interest in any of this. That woman goes into a party, brings her food, goes into a party, and she just wants to sit in the car. Like, that is her level of detached. I'd rather be in a false enclosure outside of life. Outside, I can hear the sounds of a party or a congregation of people. I'm in here. I really enjoyed the performance, like I said. Let's see if there was one other. Oh, I found it notable. I did like her with the old lady at the mansion. You know, we talk about things that are rotting and decay. This, she's almost blind. Nobody talks to her and cares about her. But she gets drunk with her. And it's just this old lady giggling, like, probably has 3 weeks left. And she's just loving life for one last bit. I thought that was kind of fun.
But I think even there, you're right. Like, but I think there's a double-edged sword to that as well, right? Because, like, she doesn't really give a fuck about this old woman.
No.
She starts by just fucking with her and stealing her booze. And then it's like, wouldn't it be funny if I got this old woman drunk? In the end, her friend, Yolanda, gets fired for this. The old woman gets put into a home.
Yeah.
Like, no one has a good end for this.
She's a bad influence.
Just, like, who, once again, just wafts off, takes off, you know, but this, Mona. Yeah, and what really, you know, we talked about a little bit, but really this whole movie is a lot of it, half of it is, like, other people kind of talking about Mona or remembering Mona or seeing them,
knows her name. It's crazy.
No one knows her name.
It's
right?
Yeah, the girl. Exactly. She was, you know.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. But they see so much in her. But yeah. Anyway, it's. I think for me, it's really all about the performance and just the overall empathy of it all. And just this whole thing of, like, you don't really understand people. You think you understand people because you have perceptions about the world. You have perceptions about yourself, and you apply them to other people, but you don't really know. Like, Yolanda sees her with her boyfriend at the time.
Yeah.
And thinks, that's the relationship I want. Why don't I have that relationship with my dirtbag boyfriend, Paulo? Now, as it turns out, like, Mona was just there for the weed. As soon as the weed ran out, like, and that guy, like, got punched, he was like, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm gone. And I'm never coming back. And, like, that's, you never even think about it again. That dude almost, like, accidentally burns her to death. In a complete accident. That boyfriend she abandoned, like, almost, like, burns her down. Just through a sheer coincidence. But, yeah, I think to me it's... This whole film relies on Sandrine Bonnaire's amazing performance, and then Agnes Varda's just bottomless empathy. I think she's an amazing woman, and I'm excited that we have several more Agnes Varda movies to watch.
She's basically a kid, right? Like, that actress was, what, 18, 19?
She's very young. Yeah, very young. And she's had a long career since then. But, yeah, she did win the big prize, the big French
to be, like, the... main focus of a movie like this, where that asks you to just, like, shed all of the, there's going to be no glamour. You're going to get worse as the film goes on. Your hair's going to get rattier.
Oh my God.
Your fingernails will get dirtier.
You know those like montage sequences where it's like you take somebody and you're just like, look, here's an axe. Here's how you swing it. And three shots later, they're Paul Bunyan.
Yeah.
This movie has like opposite versions of that. Remember the whole like wine cutting sequence, right? Like this Tunisian guy just out of pure kindness is just like, here, come in, like have a home.
Yeah.
You just got to do this job. We're just cutting pieces off of this. You know, it's the off season for the wine plants. And so we're just cutting these pieces off. And when she starts, she's like, she's not very good at it, but she seems like, oh, I'm trying.
Yeah.
How do you do it? And then it's like she's trying less.
Yeah.
She's trying less. And then by the end, she's just reading a book while he's doing it. It's just like, you just get like worse and worse. And she does this over and over and over again. She's an absolutely frustrating character. Yeah. It's, but I thought it was absolutely fantastic at the same time. So, Quirky, let's remind everybody about our rating system. Of course, we rate on the sight or sound system. If both of us feel that this was a sound selection by the critics pulled by sight and sound, then kaboom, the cannons roar and into the cannon fodder cannon it goes. If one or both of us thought it was a little sight, then we will suggest a slighted movie not in the sight and sound top 250 to put in its place. Corky, I put it to you, although I think I know the answer. Slight or sound?
Oh, I'm going to say it's slight, and I apologize to folks.
No apology necessary, sir.
I know there's a...
Just people on this big, beautiful blue marble.
You right?
Know? We're all vagabonds of life.
So. It didn't pull me in, and there wasn't anything to that. What I would say, oh, man, that was captivating, fascinating. I would love to watch that again. I got to recommend that. So, sorry. For me, it was slight.
Oh, I'm sound all the way, and I feel like it's a movie that is just kind of getting richer and more nuanced and is provoking a lot more thought as I have sat with it over the last few days, and it's a movie I look forward to watching again. As like I said, we have several more Agnes Varda movies, which I haven't seen any of them, and those are all coming up on our journey as we continue on this journey to watch all the films on the Sight and Sound Top 250. But wah wah, that means the cannons will not roar today. The cannons won't even meow today. But Quirky, puts it on you where I need a slighted movie not in the Sight and Sound Top 250 for you to put in its place.
Okay. I have two movies.
And I would love it if, while putting it in its place, if you put me in my place.
Oh, God. That's what I've been waiting for.
And that's what the listeners are hoping for right now. They're like, oh, that guy's just asking for it. Oh, boy. God, just put him in his place, Quirky. Come on.
I got two movies. One.
You got two.
I will nominate for Canonhood. Okay. And interesting, that's the one I'm going to talk about least. And one I recently saw that I really liked more than Vagabond, but it's very similar to me. They're both movies made outside of America. The first one that I would recommend for Canonhood is The Harder They Come, a movie made in Jamaica starring Jimmy Cliff about a guy. We just see him come into town from the countryside. And you want to talk about self-destructive behavior. He tries very briefly to make it in the music business, but he's never going to do a day's worth of work. From the beginning, he wants to be a gangster or just take what he wants. And he pursues the rebellious nature, not so much rejecting society, but rejecting the man until the very end and the inevitable death at the end of this movie. A great soundtrack, a wonderful movie that celebrates the culture of the reggae movement at that time. And I love that movie. So that's my one for the canonhood.
That's for the canon.
Yes. All right. The other one is a movie I saw recently, 1962 film, late Italian, neorealism movement.
Mm-hmm.
Francesco Rosi made a film called Salvatore Giuliano.
Ooh.
Italian film starts with a death, opens up on a dead body in the town square, in a courtyard. has been murdered. So from then on, it's recreation of a true story with, you know, some hyper realism aspects of it. But it also is just filmed on location in these tiny Italian villages right outside of Castelvetrano, where they was actually all the events happened post-war, criminal empire and bootlegging and corruption and all this kind of shit. So it's part true crime documentary, part biopic, part courtroom drama, because the third act becomes all about like the actual courtroom drama. It's opposite of Vagabond in that like you rarely see this guy's face, the main center. It's all about everybody talking about this person and reacting to what they have to do. Mm-hmm. And the events unfold as that it hops back and forth in time. So beautifully shot, thinking that it was shot on the fucking Italian mountainside, like in this tiny village. And it was supposed to be occupation of the fascist Italian government occupying their little town and going after this criminal, where like they get 1 hour a day where they can go do their chores, and the whole village empties out into the street to start washing things and bring the cow over to drink out of the same place where they're washing and shit. It's just it's really, really well done and captivating. So it's similar to Vagabond in that it starts with a death and then you kind of see the events that lead to it. And, you know, people are telling the story and there's a lot of unreliable narrators, but it's a great study of corruption and paranoia too.
Awesome. Well, that sounds really good. I've never actually seen Salvatore Giuliano. But I assume it's on Criterion Channel. It's probably in my queue.
Yeah.
Or watch list or whatever they call theirs. I have seen The Harder They Come. That's probably 20 years ago now that I saw it. If we're talking soundtrack, that's an A+. That's canon. Holy fuck. That canon. That's forget soundtracks. That's just one of the great albums of all time. Like, honestly, that's 10 top 10, 20 albums of all time for me. Movie, I really like it. I wouldn't go canon with it. But again, it's been 20 years, so maybe it's one I need to take another look at. But I thought it was like a really strong B movie, and I really liked the kind of cultural views of it and just how authentic it felt. It just for me is not like a canon level film, although very good and recommendable and everyone should see it and especially listen to the soundtrack. So unfortunately, it looks like our canon is just staying, you know, it's staying where it is. It's holding steady is what it is, Quirky. It's the hold steady.
It's a Canadian band. That's what we thought about Vagabond. We think it's a Canadian band. Did you watch Vagabond? If so, what did you think about it? Tell us. Please tell us what you thought about it. Had you seen it before, or was it us talking about it that made you want to see it? We'd love to hear your take. Contact us on Facebook and Instagram at Dear Daniel Pod. Tell us those thoughts.
Well, now, of course, it's that time to summon the random number generator gods and pick the movie we'll review in 2 weeks on our next episode. You ready for this, Quirky?
Yeah, let's go.
Hit the button. Boop, 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 boop. Beam. Oh, wow. Number 50. How perfect is that?
Oh, no way.
Number 50 on our list. Oh, wow. And how perfect is this, too? An Italian neorealist movie.
Quirky, oh, hell yeah.
Do you believe this sometimes? The gods must be crazy, right? Fun reference. That's not in the top 250, but you know what is, Quirky? A movie called A Paisan.
Oh.
It's a Paisan, a 1946 Roberto Rossellini. I'll let you know the letterbox description of the film. During the Allied invasion of Italy in World War II, six stories unfold in various regions from Sicily to the northern Po Valley. These tales follow the interactions between American soldiers and Italian civilians as they navigate their way through language barriers and cultural differences. So yeah, 1946, this would be the follow-up to what's kind of considered the first Italian neorealism film, which is Rossellini's Open City, Rome Open City, with Anna Magnani. This was his follow-up, 1946. It's also, I believe Open City's also on the top 250, and so is Paisan. It's available to watch on Criterion Channel. and HBO Max if you have subscriptions to either of those. I think those are your best bets. I don't see any rental options anywhere. So if you want to be my Paizan, you'll subscribe to one of those, watch Paizan, and then listen to us review Paizan. A Paizan?
A Paizan!
You're my Paizan! That's my point next. That's all we have for you on this week's show. Join us in 2 weeks when we'll be reviewing A Paizan. And I'll be speaking in an even more accent than that. I'm going to work on it over the next 2 weeks. If you're interested in playing along with the home game, the movie is available to watch, like I said, Criterion and HBO Max. Those are your best bets, Paizan.
Until then, follow Dare Daniel Pod on Facebook and Instagram. Like and rate us on your favorite podcast app. If you'd like to donate to the show, visit daredaniel.com. Find support the show in the menu or look for the donate button. For Cannon Fodder, I'm Corky McDonald.
And I'm Daniel Barnes saying down with the man. Oh, I already did that bit. Saying save us a seat in the back row. Bye-bye.
Toodles, my G.